information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Smart Money, the knowledge of debt. In late 2010, controversy raged throughout Britain at the proposed increase of university tuition fees. Students marched in the streets, chanted slogans, waved banners, and broke a few windows. These actions culminated in the events of Thursday, December 9, when a large protest took over Parliament Square as politicians voted on the issue. Even so, the result was a small majority in favour of increasing tuition fees. With pushing and shoving on both sides, plus a chance attack on the Prince of Wales, questions were bound to be asked. Such actions have been condemned by some and praised by others as a return to student radicalism. Sometimes those who praise the actions have not been in favour of the cause, lending admiration to the concept of demonstration, if not the current concern. Students of old would demonstrate about poverty or war, not their own financial plight. What has been forgotten is any discussion of the nature of education itself, particularly higher education. What is this need to study or learn to such a prescribed format? Why should anyone wish to become bonded by debt in order to meet those demands? The very phrase, higher education, suggests a hierarchy of learning, and in fact there are terms that come earlier in the sequence. We have primary education, meaning primal or first, secondary education, and then tertiary or higher education. The first two are compulsory, whilst the third, the higher, is seen as a privilege. Presumably this is why the price can be justified through the imposition of fees, the knowledge that such education puts one in a higher position in society and able to claim better careers. The conflated term for the two greatest English universities, Oxbridge, suggests admission to a chosen elite, a group that can enter society at a higher level, having been initiated through the establishments of Oxford and Cambridge. These graduates often dominate upper middle class professions, such as the law, publishing, broadcasting, and politics, and can aid each other through recognition in a manner complementary to the old school tie concept of public school pupils entering influential professions, then aiding each other through later life. The old boy network is another term that refers to such an elite. During the years of the Blair Brown government, the idea of higher education was pushed on the masses. It was no longer enough to gain the basic civility and skills granted by primary and secondary education. The acquisition of a degree was paramount, this being the qualification granted by universities on the completion of a course of study. The word degree can be used in the context of measurement, most obviously of temperature, it's 10 degrees centigrade outside, and also in geometry, such as the 90 degree angle or right angle. The Freemasons used degrees as a description of rank, with as many as 33 levels reported within their secretive organisation. This makes an interesting parallel with how universities prime their students for society, where the level of qualification can decide on later success. Degrees are increments on a scale, which can go up or down. A student can attain a first or second degree at university, labelling each with a different level of attainment. The polytechnics had previously granted qualifications in more practical subjects, as implied by their name. Polytechnics were higher education colleges that supposedly matched the ranking of universities, but had been scornfully viewed as inferior. This snobbish view of practical skills, such as agriculture, craft and technology, led to the rebranding of polytechnics as universities, with their diplomas also becoming degrees. One may or may not be the equivalent of the other, But in this form of social engineering, everyone's a winner. It was once said, we're all working class now, as a way for the middle classes to blur the guilty differentials lent by prosperity. In a strange reversal, the proliferation of degrees, once the hallmark of the privileged, created a paradoxical situation. We're all elitist now. Elites used to be chosen more stringently with the requirement of a classical language, Latin or Greek, to be studied before admission to the great Oxbridge universities. Latin was the most commonly taught and was the hallmark of the grammar school pupil who had passed the 11 plus examination and entered the preferred level of secondary education. In a metaphorical sense, the primary education had been a kind of amorphous soup from which talent and intelligence were distilled, in just the way that an aspirational worker might rise from the working class to join the middle ranks. Apart from a smarter uniform, the study of Latin was a privilege attained by the grammar school pupil. A highly structured and logical language, Latin would be taught by gowned patricians who would attempt to justify the relevance, not only of a dead language, but its peculiar narratives, tales of Roman soldiers and ancient battles, obscure to the modern world, or epic sagas of dubious excitement unfolding at the dull pace of a stilted translation. In the mundane imposition of the subject, with fear-based obligations of homework and exam results, the merit would be lost to many. These would soon drop the subject and enter the B stream. Others would soldier on to achieve success within the confines of the teaching and thus gain their academic credit. In a sense, the failed pupils had missed the wood for the trees. Their initial curiosity at mythology and language had been spoilt by the imposition of difficult usage beyond all contemporary need. Sadly, the very merits of Latin, its deep roots in the English language, had become lost in the detail of its study. Perhaps playing the game was the sake of the game, knowing perhaps that the language as taught was useless, but that the true test was in the stimulation of intelligence. Those in the know would put their heads down, pass the exam, however stressful, with the foreknowledge that this classical qualification was a key to higher things. The paradox of this supposedly meritorious system, opening opportunities to all, was that it presumed prior knowledge of the process. To be merely clever would not be enough, for one must also be compliant. Successful pupils would usually come from wealthier homes where the system was understood. The glittering prizes had been reserved for those who met both criteria. The smart money would be granted an Oxbridge education and entrance into society's elite. With the removal of such difficulty, success was promised to all. However, the question of feasibility remained. How could everyone, potentially, become part of the highest group when there were no lower degrees on the scale? If exams were dumbed down so all would pass, how could achievement ever be measured? If everyone could achieve a degree, how would the next elite be formed? The system had created a new paradox. In shifting from selective, class-based ideas, it tried to create a liberal utopia. Yet the very liberation put impossible demands on the structures that had spawned it. If everyone studied to become the elite, who would be the elite to teach them? More pragmatically, in a society where everyone was judged by the degree they held, how could society afford such a vast and expansive system? If a prize is a reward for achievement, there can only be so many prizes. They are given freely to the recipients who have achieved a level or degree of quality. When everyone is a winner in this liberal utopia, the prizes have to be paid for. Thus, the imposition and increase in tuition fees, so that the masses can call themselves an elite. Many would argue that grammar schools were a snobbish institution and that the old universities taught the knowledge of a complacent establishment. Surely in liberating everything, a better system was achieved, one in which everyone could have a degree, and a degree could be in anything. Not just mathematics, history, physics or medicine, but dance, tourism and fun. Nothing should be above criticism, not least the educational establishment. But the old degrees were distilled disciplines which could be subsequently applied to narrower careers. Specialist applications and vocational skills have been successfully taught by other methods, including technical schools, apprenticeships, and yes, the old polytechnics. While professing to spread opportunity, this new liberalisation did the exact opposite. It downgraded the best routes to attain practical skills while puffing their theoretical aspects up into a faux academia. Thus, students on such courses feel the buzz of aspiration, but are led to the end of a rainbow where they find no gold. These degrees do not put them in the elite, for the true elite know the rules of the game and look elsewhere. The degree is some kind of attainment, but one of obedience to a system rather than any great mark of rank. Another piece of paper, in a world where all have a piece of paper. Society creates this illusory trick and knows that little value has been created in economic terms, so the only way to recoup the cost of the system must be to pass off the cost to its customers. This dull, generic term might as well serve for students as it does so many other groups. The Liberal Democrats may have pledged to oppose tuition fees before coming to power in May 2010. How much weight did the pledge ever have? In such a state as this, one may as well promise a barbecue summer or lack of troublesome snow. Morally, the party might well oppose the imposition of fees, but as part of a deterministic system, their pledge had the weight of a good luck wish on the verge of an impossible exam.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.